I am Chandrika Krishnamurthy Tandon. I'm an artist. I love to sing. I'm deeply involved in the business world, and I'm also involved in serving the academic world as well, because I'm committed to economic and emotional empowerment of the planet. And you're listening now to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Yeah. My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Hi, everyone. On this episode of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, a conversation with musician, business leader, and humanitarian, Chandrika Tandon. Stay tuned. As always, thank you for listening to the show and for sharing and downloading and rating and kindly reviewing. It's very much appreciated and I'm super grateful. You know, we often take it for granted, but I'll honestly tell you what else I'm grateful for. Love, light, and laughter. They're all such simple things, and I promise you that if you ever spend some time with humanitarian, global business leader, and Grammy-nominated musician Chandrika Tandon, you'll know why it's just simply so important to keep love, light, and laughter always at the focus of your everyday, because you'll hear her say it repeatedly and absolutely mean it. Chandrika was one of the earliest women leaders in the business world, starting as the youngest partner at the global management consulting firm McKinsey, and then pioneering a measurable approach to transforming financial institutions through her firm, Tandon Capital Associates, generating billions of dollars of market cap. She completely changed her career trajectory then, working in helping humanitarian causes and starting a music career. Her debut album, Soul, amazingly was Grammy Award nominated for Best Global Album, and she's been celebrated across the world for her musical offerings that build community and share an incredibly positive energy. She's recently released a new album, Ummu's Treasures, mostly a children's album comprising new renditions of folk staples, 50s and 60s classics, French songs, as well as traditional Indian chants. Helping her on the album are world-class musicians Bella Fleck, Kenny Werner, Eugene Friesen, and many others. All proceeds from the record, of course, go to her Krishnamurthy Tandon Foundation, which supports emotional and economic well-being, as Chandrika works with the same tenacity that served her so well in the business world to serve humanity and inspire others to do the same. Now, with over two decades of leadership roles in higher education and the arts, including serving as a trustee at NYU, Chandrika has been a tireless champion for access to educational opportunities, particularly in STEM-related fields. So I was absolutely delighted to catch up with her and chat about her motivations, about the music, and about weaving lessons from the corporate environment into the arts and vice versa. But we started out with how she feels about music and art, guiding the general structure of her day.
In a way, it's not just about the general structure of my day. It's almost the general structure of my life. Because I think music for me is really the way I found myself. So because I went, you know, as you know, I've had a long business career. And about 20 years ago, I went and really had a kind of a crisis of spirit. And part of that crisis of spirit was looking at what made me happy. And I found out that the happiest moments of my life all had to do with music. And it wasn't just listening to music that was part of it. It was singing. It was sharing music with other people. It was singing with other people. It was composing. So that's what gave me a great deal of joy. So over the years, I've taken the time to do all of it. Just for the sheer joy of the process. So in any one day, I feel my day is not complete unless I have at least one element of that in every day. I could be just listening, you know, to something and I'm obsessed with that particular piece and I'm listening to it for 20 times in a row, you know, because it's a particular rag or a particular song or something. Or I'm composing something and, you know, Abhay, when I get into the composing moments, I'm like a fiend.
Right.
I don't need food. I don't need, because my brain and everything is just working around these flowing sounds, which are gathered from the universe, it seems. So it's a very profound part of my being.
Yeah. I wonder, it sounds like you draw so much energy from this on an ongoing basis. And I'm so curious that as you so elegantly mentioned that it provides a structure, not just to your day-to-day, but to your life, as whether it's through composition and really immersing yourself and almost losing yourself in that you know, composition or in the even the art and the science of making composition. But I'm curious for you, was music and art and this kind of expression, was it something that was always pervasive throughout your life, even in your kind of corporate and consulting journey? Was that while you had a coming to, if you will, of spirit, even while you were in the corporate world and as a consultant and as a business leader, did you find that even that music was just kind of always there? It was just rather perhaps simmering or providing you some undertones to success as a leader?
Well, undertones is a really precise word, because I'll give you an example. When I'm in corporate meetings, and this is a true story, I couldn't make it up. I'll never forget, I was in a boardroom and the air conditioner was going on pretty strongly. And in my head, there was a meeting going on and the air conditioner was this unconscious drone that was going on. So I was singing to this humming under my breath while I'm conducting a perfectly sane meeting. And I'll never forget, the CEO stopped the meeting in between and says, "Chandrika, is that you humming under your breath?"
Right.
And I said, "Oh, was I really doing that?" So that's kind of one vignette. The other side of it, as you know, over the years, I did so much work all over the world.
Yeah.
I lived in Brazil, I lived in France, I lived in God knows so many parts of the world, where I, in the Netherlands, you know, where I was working for many months at a time. And music came to me in two ways. One is I'd finish my meetings at 10 o'clock at night and go hit the piano bar. And I'd be really the only non-Brazilian there, because Caetano Veloso, this great Brazilian singer, was going to be singing there. And I learned a lot of language through music. In fact, I'll never forget, when I went into Brazil, I was in the Rio Palace, the hotel, for the first morning I just arrived in, and I heard this song of Gal Costa while I was having breakfast, about to go into a very big meeting. And I'll never forget how hooked I was by listening to the song, I'll never, Au Balancé, Balancé. And then I wrote it down. I said, I shouldn't forget it. And so all my clients would give me, I have one of the best collections of music, say Brazilian music, for example, because my clients would give me rare recordings. I didn't want any gifts. I didn't want anything. This became our exchange.
Almost a connector in building lots of relationships.
Yes. And I learned languages through music. So I kind of traveled all over Brazil. So I got to know more about Brazilian music than most people, because, for example, like up to the northern part of Brazil, which is a different kind of music, you know, the axé and, you know, the mid music, the southern music. So I learned Portuguese, because I would write down the words painstakingly and then get a dictionary. This is before Google Translate existed,
right,
to translate.
Yeah.
And the last thing is that what the business world allowed me to do is it allowed me to buy tickets, great seats, the best concerts. So in Australia, here I was in Brisbane doing a deal, but in Sydney, the Seekers were doing their big reunion concert. And I grew up listening to the Seekers. So, and they were crazy expensive tickets. But you know what? I flew down to Sydney and got tickets for two nights in a row for the Seekers concert. I mean, this is how I chose to spend my money. I couldn't care less if I had clothes or jewelry. But to me, it was very important to spend that resource to hear my favorite band. And that was one of their most final concerts ever, when they sang this "I Am Australian." I'll never forget that moment. And I did that many times.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, you mentioned the example of having almost the like surpeti, in the boardroom, and then of course going to see concerts that are really special, or learning language and understanding new music, and for that matter, making connections and developing relationships. Did all of these things together, in a way, was music sort of the binding glue to help you become a better leader?
It's not just the binding glue to becoming a better leader, it's to become a better person. Because it helped me find the deepest part of myself. Mm. Because to really sing well, because I was also, as part of my journey, singing. And to sing in perfect sur, you have to be quiet in your mind. And you can, and my teacher would, I would walk into a class, and I, even in a Zoom, it wasn't really Zoom, it would be some sort of Skype. And the teacher would say, Chandrika ji, today you shouldn't sing, or just sit there for the next 45 minutes and let's just do Om. And we would just stay. And by the time the first half hour of Om's went, I was in a space that was so transcendent and so beautiful. And that was the space that we can all access. But music allowed me to access it much faster and in a much more precise way. I mean, now we talk of sound healing, but I was doing my own version of sound healing with music. So it helped me find myself, and I became a completely different person as a result of that, because I started signing all my emails, Love, Light, Laughter.
Yeah, yeah.
To the toughest corporate bosses, you know. Why? Because not for any woo-woo reason. I was doing it because I would feel so much love and joy that I would want to remind myself that that's the space I always want to be in. So, and even in the tough corporate environments, when you're having a tough conversation or you're saying no to something, which are always awkward, whenever I put Love, Light, Laughter, I would go back and read what I wrote again and say, you know, maybe I don't need to be so harsh, or maybe I can pause on this for a little bit. So I just became a lot more compassionate as a human being. So, of course, it translates into leadership. It translates into every facet of your life.
Well, and it reminds us of, you know, how powerful the solace and quiet and pauses in our minds can actually translate to great, great outcomes, and, you know, lead to more compassion and allow for execution in a way to actually, you know, flow a little bit more gracefully and peacefully, because you can filter out the noise from signals. And maybe music was allowing you to do that.
Yes. And the flip side too is some of my best compositions happened when I was on intensive meditation retreats, because as a result of this, I loved that quiet space so much that I sought out opportunities
right.
for more quiet. And when you'd go in there, you'd be able to access different realms of the subconscious. And then you can pretty much see, you can access creativity, you can access sounds. As they say, you know, there's a beautiful Hindi saying, which I can't quite put it in Hindi, but it says, the rhythms are in the universe, the rhythms are in the clap of the thunder, the rhythms are in every sound that goes on around us. The music, the sounds and the harmonies are also in nature. But we put it all together and we say it's ours, but it really isn't. It's always there. And so in a lot of ways, it allows you to experience, while we're getting a little metaphysical in this, it allows you to experience a much higher realm of understanding of just the gifts that you are able to access.
You know, I was thinking a little bit about your latest works. And as an artist, I imagine, and certainly resonating for me again as a pediatrician, but as an artist, I'm imagining that Ammu's Treasures speaks to certainly children and resonates with their families quite a bit. But is it in a way speaking to what you just mentioned, to this kind of inner child and this background in yourself? You know, as we revert back to discovering who we are through art and expression and the things we do, was this a lesson in some ways to re-harness some of that in yourself as a person?
And this is a really beautiful question, because after all these years of the corporate life and then doing being sort of a professional artist to some degree with the Grammy nomination and all that, I had grandchildren. And, you know, I didn't quite have the time when my daughter was young, not in the same way because I was so busy. But with a grandchild, something deeper in your heart opens up. And so you're able to figure out how to share in a much more joyous, exuberant way. And that's how Amu's Treasures started. It was really a way to sing. I started with the chants because, you know, and the chants are so calming. And my little, the oldest one, who's now just five, he would literally, it doesn't matter what time of day it was. My daughter used to call me the music whisperer, song whisperer, I think was her term. Because whatever time of, whether he'd just woken up from a nap, if I started singing, he would fall asleep again. And it's funny, I had the two little boys here last night. They're now 5 and 3. And again, the younger guy said, no, Amu, I want to read for a long time. I want to do this. I want to do that. One song, two songs. The second song, the two little boys are so quiet, so deeply into themselves. That's what the music ended up doing for them. But the other reaction, Abhay, which I never expected, that was a surprise, is when I played it to a couple of the older folks, you know, sort of my age group people, when the first time I made the album, one of the women started just weeping. I mean, like, and just crying. And I said, once we just sat through two songs, and then I said, well, what was going through your mind? Why, what were you feeling? She said, I wish my mother had sung these songs to me. And her mother, she was going through a tough time with her mom. And similarly, in a couple of other people I've spoken to, the older people's reactions, oh my God, my dad used to sing Doggy in the Window to me all the time. Right. Or my mom used to sing Que Sera Sera all the time. So all these are beautiful melodies memorialized in incredibly simple lyrics and tunes. And I feel it's a great gift to sing them, to share them. And at all ages. And for and Prague, when I went there with the children, it wasn't just children. Nobody knew English, Abhay, but families were all singing Que Sera Sera together.
I saw that. Yeah, I was able to actually see you share this with, you know, different children and different cultures around the world. And of course, being that in universal connector, it's so great. You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, let's come back to our conversation with Chandrika Tandon. Stay tuned. Conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, this is Vidya Balan, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hi, this is Farhan Akhtar.
Hi, guys, I'm Ananya Pandey.
Hi, this is Madhuri Dixit, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Welcome back to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's now rejoin our conversation with Chandrika Tandon. You mentioned that, you know, for you, there's a completely different relationship. I mean, I remember very distinctly when my grandparents would sing for us. And you're right, there was a very different relationship that and even feeling that that evokes as a child. You know, for you in this new role and as an artist now, really harnessing this, were there some self-discoveries that you made about yourself, particularly in taking down some of and expressing this particular aspect of your art?
You know, very often as an artist, particularly as a mature artist that I was, because I didn't start performing it, you know, professionally from the very, very young age, I started late. But then I always had this fear, you know, was I good enough? Oh my God, I remember telling one of my masters, saying to him, look, I'll never be as good as you. I'll never be as good as that person. And then he said something to me, which changed my whole understanding. And it's deepened now. He said, look, if everybody in a forest was a nightingale, it would be the most boring forest. Everyone has a different sound, and that's what makes perfection. And then I started to understand and think that I am perfection. So opening my heart and sharing what I am without judgment is a very important thing to do. So that's been a huge discovery for me in the whole course of the music, and particularly with my grandchildren.
Right.
And the other part of the discovery, which particularly when I, and this was a surprise because I didn't, I made this really for my grandchildren to start with. But then I go to Prague and I go to Washington and I'm working with all these children all over the world. Everybody was my grandchild.
Yeah. Yep.
And I felt this ocean, this boundless ocean of love, and they received it. And they as wanted as much a hug from me as they wanted to sing with me. They, and so this notion that we as grown-ups, if we open our heart, whether we sing or dance or draw or tell stories, and they're all gifts we can share, but just being this figure of unconditional love is one of the greatest gifts we can share with each other. So I think it's just made me a lot more open, Abhay. It's made me a lot more aware of when I do share the love and wanting to share more love, and not putting barriers and being my own worst enemy. Particularly when you come from a corporate background, you think you need to look and feel and behave a certain way. And I think a lot of that's fallen off the wayside for me.
You bring up such an interesting thought, and I'm super curious about this one, because what you just mentioned about the gift of sharing and receiving and also expressing love and compassion in whichever vehicle you choose to, right? I'm so curious whether or not you find that it in fact threads together commonalities, or does it in many ways showcase some of the differences in giving as an artist versus giving as a financier versus giving as a philanthropist? Are they all kind of the same thing? Or in fact, you know, yes, there are compartments that they each belong in, slightly separately.
When I started to redo my life around finding some time for music with my business interests, I also made a commitment, as I got to know more about myself, to get away from a selfish bubble and really live a life of service for a good part of every day, whether it's a random act of kindness or whether it is a conscious serving. And that's why I got involved with NYU, even though I never went to school there. You know, so it was really a gift that I wanted to give. I didn't look at it as, oh, look, I'm going to give a gift. And I don't even like the term philanthropist, because that's not where I started with NYU. I had nothing to do with it or any other place. I started just giving a huge amount of my time. I was what they called an executive in residence. I just taught. I was supposed to spend 3 hours a week there. I spent 3 days a week. I was with the students. I was with the dean. Nobody paid me a dime. I just worked. And I still spend a lot of time with the institutions I'm involved in. The money comes much later. So therefore, all of this is just opening yourself up. You've been given gifts, whatever those gifts are. Each of us has a deck of cards. And that deck of cards isn't going to change, because this isn't something that you're losing and picking up. It's just been given to you. So you have to maximize that deck and see what's the best game you can play with those cards. And to me, the redefinition, if you like, so the two compartments come very closely together, the service and the music and the understanding. The business world is slightly different, because there you still have to deal with certain shareholder objectives or maximizing, and there are trade-offs. So and so you can't be a bleeding heart and say, oh, I'll never deal with layoffs, or I'll never deal with, there are trade-offs. So you have to make a decision. But what I think, it's what you said earlier, you open up your entire being to a lot more compassion. And I know, Abhay, if I had to go back, 30 years now and redo my business life, I would do things just a lot differently, actually. And I would have had a lot less stress in everything I did. I would have approached everything like a game a little bit. I wouldn't have tried to control everything. I would have just been a very different person.
Sure. And I mean, it's the idea that if we approach things in retrospect, it hopefully, I mean, we learn from it. It informs us in how we live our lives, you know, going forward. And hopefully those lessons are translating to those who are maybe entering that world now and in the future. Some people from the outside perhaps might perceive your journey as very, in some ways, binary and linear, where someone made a pivot. But it sounds like what you were sharing just now was much more of a manifestation of something that perhaps was already there. And it was just something that was emanating from within, waiting to, in some ways, express itself. When, you know, how do you perhaps take those two juxtapositions and, you know, those perceptions somehow and reflect on that now, where someone says, boy, Chandrika ji, that you made this, you had this aha moment and it seemed like you just completely shifted directions, as opposed to, well, no, this was something that I just had to really, you know, harness in myself, and it was waiting to be expressed and it was blossoming all this time. I don't know if that makes sense, by the way.
Completely, yeah. It really was a bit of both, because in a sense, if I were to step back and characterize it, I'd say I moved away from accidental living to intentional living. So I really thought hard about how I wanted to spend my time. Here I was working with institutions, 70, 80 institutions, CEOs, thinking with them about how to transform their institutions, how they were going to make different choices. And I would always look at people's calendars and say, hey, you're only as good as what you do. You can have all the great intentions in the world, but if you don't follow through and your calendar doesn't reflect what your strategic goals are. So what this pivot allowed me to do is A, create a personal plan for myself. I mean, here we create business plans, we create plans for hospitals and corporations and so on, but very often we don't think of a personal plan. Yeah. We just evolve it.
Right.
So I started to think very consciously about what made me happy, how I wanted to spend my time. I said music was going to have a part of every day, that service was going to have a part of every day. Could be 5 minutes, could be that I helped someone cross the road, but it was small stuff, anonymous, most of the stuff. And that I would still keep the business side. The business side was fun for me. I loved doing it. And so it was an intentional decision. Now, it turns out that in every single day, the pie chart would look a little different. You know, some days I would be doing a lot more composing, or if I was in the studio, you know, my business life would be a sliver. But other days, you know, like this week is a great example. I've been in board meetings for most of the week and, you know, and been dealing with investment issues and all the rest of it, which are very business-like in its entirety almost.
Yeah. You know, given that the pie chart changes both on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, even year-to-year basis, as your career and professional and personal integration of all these things evolve over time, I understand, and actually I'm curious about, as a business leader, we talked about how these things inform you as a business leader, and there are realities that you have to really map out, whether it's your personal calendar, your professional calendar, but you have to have strategy to this. You just mentioned that the business aspect of things remains fun and exciting, and, you know, it's a part of your world. Are there at all things that you've taken away from that corporate and that execution and strategy environment that in fact have made you a better artist?
Absolutely. Because look, I've come from the best of the best institutions. Yeah. I went to IIM Ahmedabad, which is the top business school, and I was trained at McKinsey, where, you know, I did mega restructurings where I had hundreds of people working with me, and we created the whole thing around a goal. So what that makes me be is very organized, I'm very strategic, and I'm very goal-driven, goal-oriented. In fact, when I work on the business side, that when I work on my artistic side. Now, does that mean that my artistry gets compromised? No, but I don't stop until the work is done at the highest perfection. I'll tell you, that showed up. It's a great example. When I was doing Amu's Treasures, I could have stopped making the album months before, but I could hear every moment of quote-unquote lack of excellence, and I went for the highest standards. And that's kind of the way I worked with my clients over the years in the business, and I still do. I wanted them to have the best of me. So this is the way I thought about Amu's Treasures. I said, if we're going to give it to the world, we're going to have the best musicians, the best production standards. In fact, my studio people would go nuts because they'd say, Chandrika, this is our 15th mix we've done. I said, yes, I know it's a 15th mix, but something isn't right. We could have said goodbye 12 mixes ago, but I didn't. So I think I'm very excellence driven. And I think the other thing is that I'm able to see, I'm not sort of a scatterbrained person in that way. I'm very organized. I can see all the different pieces that need to be put together. So right now, I would say I'm a pretty good expert about recording, mixing, mastering, all of that. I mean, an industry I knew nothing about.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, I love how, I was just going to say, I love how it's an iterative education, and it is something that allows you to not just be a perfectionist, but to pursue excellence and pursue mastery.
I think pursue excellence is the issue. And it's not just with the music and the artistic side. It's exactly the same with the work that I'm doing in serving institutions. So when I work with NYU and the academic institutions, and for example, on science and technology, and I'm involved in a couple of other institutions, I really step back and think about how do you transform a school which is so low ranked, and how do you bring it up into a different sphere? And I've had a lot of business experience. It's not an academic setting, but the lessons are the same. It's the execution's different, and the issues are different. You've got to deal with more concerns about faculty and, you know, all of that. But the questions are the same that you would ask.
It's so funny. I do think that part of the reason why I find it satisfying and gratifying to connect with so many people is this notion that, in fact, lessons that we take from various aspects of our professions, our lives, our environments, in fact, are so translatable to others. It just has to, you first have to have some empathy. You first have to have at least an interest and intellectual curiosity. But then once that spirit sort of captivates you, you can actually pursue excellence. And the things that you probably learn in a variety of different locations, in fact, are translated to so many other new ones. You just have to open that window and allow yourself to do that. And hopefully there's substrate that is allowing you to do that as well.
Can I build on that point, which is, I think, a really interesting one? I think the other thing is we are all multidimensional people. Fundamentally, and I think one of our biggest failings, and I'll speak for myself, but I noticed this with a lot of people, particularly people who are very successful in one or two fields, one field most of the time, is they really define themselves by that field. You know, you so rarely see world-class business people who would also talk about being world-class something else. They just don't. But in fact, I think they're not one or the other. And I think we owe it to ourselves. Perhaps that's the only dimension of yours that you are ever interested in exploring, but you need to make that a conscious decision. And that's why I say, for me, this is going from accidental exploration of life into an intentional exploration of life.
I love that. My favorite example of something like that is the knowledge that Steve Martin, who's a very famous actor and an artist and producer and writer, also happens to be a world-class banjo player, which I didn't know till recently. So, you know, it's great to see people's multiplicity and the different versions that they have of themselves and as they pursue excellence in so many different areas. You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with Chandrika Tandon. Stay tuned. Every story told is a lesson learned, and every lesson learned is a story waiting to be told. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, this is Cal Penn. I'm an actor, author, former public servant, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tam France.
Hi, I am Rahul Mishra.
Hi, my name is Richa Morjani, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Hi there, I'm Abhay Dandekar, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with musician, business leader, and humanitarian, Chandrika Tandon. I was thinking about Ammu's Treasures and I thought to myself, how would I describe this particular album? And the words that at least immediately came up to me were that it's something that feels global, it feels playful. It feels diverse, it feels comforting, it feels rejuvenating, and it almost is reimagining folk classics and other kind of tones in between there. I was thinking about all these adjectives, and I'm just curious if you feel that they're also adequately describing who you are as a person as well.
Those are beautiful adjectives first, I've got to say that. But I now think of my role, and Ammu's Treasures is a musical hug for the world across ages, across borders. And in a sense, that's what I want to be. I want to be someone, my definition of myself, my definition of my dream for myself in the few hours, days, months, years that we have on this planet, especially me being where I am. Is that I can be that open-hearted beacon who will just love and be able to share as much of myself that I can and not come in the way of it, because I'm my own worst enemy. We all are to some degree.
Is it a letting go of ego in some ways?
It's letting go of all these vacillations that show up in one's day-to-day for whatever emotions. It's not ego per se. It's so many feelings it's being human, I call it.
Yeah.
But they show up, you know, whatever. And so part of it is deepening your practices and deepening your resolve and deepening your intention and re-examining your intention so that you can actually proceed on the path. I mean, there are days when I completely get derailed by myself, or I find some random things to do which aren't productive. Look, this doesn't mean that you say, oh, I'm leading this righteous life of super discipline. No, we can just be normal, happy people. Yes, I have my binge watching days of Netflix right. or whatever right. else. And I think that's wonderful and beautiful. And, you know, the last couple of days, my grandsons were visiting and I had an absolute binge time with them with all sorts of crazy stuff. But, you know, there's a time and place for that. And there's a time and place for a lot of other things.
You mentioned the word re-examining, and I thought about some of your previous work, and those on first blush, at least, seemed like they were anchored a lot more in devotional and traditional tones and rooted and anchored a little bit more to rag and tal and the classical learnings. And I'm curious if in this sort of re-examining process, especially when you were conceiving and producing and now sharing Ammu's Treasures, did you at all have to, in some ways, unlearn what you thought you or who you thought you might be as an artist?
I think it's developing a greater awareness of yourself as an artist. So when I started my first three albums, Ammu's Treasures is my fifth album. So the first three albums were traditional chants. You know, the first was done really for my father-in-law, but I rooted them in very traditional Indian ragas. But there were chants which had a higher meaning. You know, Om Namah Shivaya basically was a chant, was less devotional. It's a chant that's meant to be a purification chant. Om Namo Narayana is a harmonizing chant. If you go into the history, and your wife's a Sanskrit scholar, so, you know, those eight syllables, it's an eight syllable, which is an armor. It's a protection armor. And then the third one, which was Raghupati Raghava Raja Ram, is, of course, an iconic song for the Salt March, so to let the light inside me shine. That was those three albums, very rooted in Indian classical music. And then I started to look at myself, some of the conversation we had earlier. Over the years, from the time I was literally 3 or 5 years old, I've been singing these songs like Amu's Treasures. I've been singing Gregorian chants. I've been in choirs. I've been singing in French. So and then Shivoham the Quest, which was my mega first oratorio, was a 90-minute exploration of my journey. And my journey wasn't just an Indian music journey. It was a journey that brought the De Profundis from the Bible, because I went to a Catholic convent school. So to me, thinking about the shepherd as my Lord was equally important as I was looking at Asatoma Satgamaya. So I got more bold in expressing how I was feeling. And similarly, as I was describing my journey, and I was thinking about the yearning I used to feel for something bigger than myself, I wasn't yearning in Tamil or Hindi. I was yearning in English. So when I wrote these words, when every breath I take is a smile on your face, how do I, you know, how do I forget your face? You know, so I was writing all these lyrics in English, which is the way I thought and dreamt. So that gave me the confidence to ask for blessings in English, because that's how I think. And now Amu's Treasures is an evolution of that. Like we talk about multidimensionality, right? I am a global person. I was born in India. I've lived in so many countries. America's been my home for 43 years. And I live in New York City, one of the greatest melting pots. And I speak so many languages. I speak 9 languages. So this is really who I am. And so Amu's Treasures is a fraction of all the songs I know in all the languages.
Well, and, you know, I love the idea that it really is that fraction and that slice of getting to know you through your work in this way. And it leads me to this kind of final thought and thinking about this. And, you know, I've been grateful now to get a slice of this in this conversation for sure and in chatting with you. But, you know, in thinking of kind of the arc of this, right? You mentioned the sort of overall journey, and then the accomplishments, again, at least for on first blush, would be, wow, this is the youngest ever partner at McKinsey. This is a generous mentor. This is someone who has really led in the business world, in the corporate world, so many accolades and so much achievement there. And now giving as an advisor, as a donor, as someone who's mentoring STEM and science and business leadership education, you support so much, right? Your foundation is dedicated to emotional and economic well-being. I'm so curious, when people learn of you for the first time, when they're hearing this story, when they're hearing this story arc, or they listen to your music for the first time, or they meet you for the first time, how do you hope they feel afterwards? What do you hope is their takeaway from particularly a feeling standpoint?
Love, light, laughter. That they feel the joy within themselves, just like I think about it for myself.
Yeah.
That they understand that serving is love. Serving is a form of sharing love. Singing is a form of light. And laughter and joy is what we all hope for ourselves. And if we all had that, you know, we would celebrate the differences we would in each other. We would celebrate the world. We would have a happier place. So love, light, laughter. I remind myself of this mantra every hour of every day. I mean, if I I have my equivalent of the rosary and my japmala, and I literally think that to myself. I just say, you know, especially in days when I don't feel in the right space, it very quickly rights me.
Well, it's hard to imagine someone not coming away with that message, and it's so obvious that your spirit and message are infectious, and I'm absolutely not surprised that people, when they do meet you, they want to come up and give you a hug. Chandrika ji, thank you so much for sharing some time and really just such a terrific conversation with us. And I hope we can visit with you again in the future.
Well, Abha, it was a complete pleasure. And, you know, I think the kind of questions and the conversation we had was just so interesting. I mean, we got a little metaphysical at times, but it is, I think, the need of the hour, at least the way I think about it.
Absolutely.
So thank you for leading me in those directions.
Thank you so much, Chandrika. And please check out her work at chandrikatandon.com. Don't forget to register to vote no matter where you are. Don't forget to live with love, light, and laughter. And in the end, Jai Sri Ram. Till next time, I'm Abhay Narnekar.